Welcome back. It's the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM, and I'm Phil Taylor, your host. With me is Phil Conlon. Hi, and Phil, you watched, there's so much, there's more political meetings going on via Zoom than there used to be political meetings where you had to say, well, get your coat, we got to go downtown and watch so-and-so.
Well, yes, and of course, the meeting I was at this week, which among other groups, the Hamilton Committee to Stop the War was one of the co-sponsors of, is that the participants were from enough different places, you couldn't possibly have a live meeting where you're actually in the same room. And the guest speakers included Max Blumenthal, who's in the United States, and the Chinese consul in Calgary. And then it was chaired by a professor in Winnipeg. And I thought, you know, we used to organize conventions and people would have to, you know, get hotels and you'd have to buy airplane tickets to get all those people in one room, you know, and you'd fly in, you'd be tired, but you go to the meeting, you hear the speeches and the panels, and then you're thinking about, you got to find a restaurant and get a good night's sleep because you're tired, right? This has really changed the world, this technology, you know.
What's the title of the meeting, if you can roughly tell us, and what happened?
The meeting was about, I don't remember the title, isn't that interesting? What is happening in Xinjiang, the province in northwestern China, where the Americans and some of their friends, including the, as you call it, America's Canadian Parliament, have declared China is committing a genocide. And the speakers were all to address that allegation and to talk about what in fact is happening in Xinjiang. Of course, it was wonderful to have a diplomatic representative of the Chinese there. And I have to say that their diplomat was like what you would expect a diplomat, measured and respectful in her tone. She criticized the resolution of the House of Commons passed accusing China of genocide, but she did it in a respectful way, more like, you know, well, of course, this was an unjustified thing for them to say. She was given an opportunity during the question period to say some inflammatory things, because somebody was saying that China should ban all kinds of Canadians from visiting their country, and she didn't fall into that trap. But at one point she did say, and I was very impressed with this, you know, a lot of these politicians in Canada like to criticize China. She says, I'd like to remind you that Canada is a country that is unable to provide potable drinking water to many, many, many of its indigenous populations. And this is, you know, this is well known internationally. And she said, by contrast, in Xinjiang, we have resolved through the eradication of poverty, the situations where people did not have access to water. And don't forget, Xinjiang is a desert. It's a very large place, and a lot of it is desert. And she says, and of course we've had this problem there, but we've resolved it. I mean, it was a really a beautiful moment when she said that. And she was very straightforward in saying that we want you to come to China. We want you to see Xinjiang for yourself. Just go there. And many of the other guests, including Omar Latif, who was on this show a few weeks ago, said, please go to China and go to Xinjiang. Just walk around, ride in the subway, you know, take a bus, take a train ride there, stay in a hotel, go out and eat in restaurants, and you tell us. And of course, they made the point about the American and the Canadian accusation about how there are these concentration camps. And Max Blumenthal was just really beautiful in talking about that. He said, well, you know, he says, you look at the population of Xinjiang, you look at the numbers the Americans are throwing around, and they take satellite photographs of every corner of the earth. How come they can't show us any satellite photographs of any of these camps? And things like that. I mean, comments like that, they were very, very helpful. And they did talk about, and the consul did show photographs of some of the terrorist attacks that took place in China that were sponsored by the East Turkmenistan whatever they are, a terrorist group recognized as terrorist Islamic Front, East Turkmenistan Islamic Front. And of course, something I didn't know until she showed those photographs, those attacks were in Beijing, as well as in Xinjiang. And she showed pictures from Beijing of Islamic terrorists with knives just going out in the street and attacking random people on motor scooters, killing some of them. You know,
people should remember there is a definition. You know, terrorism is attacking non-combatants, civilians, with the purpose of disruption and breaking down social order. By the randomness is what makes it work, and that's why it's called terror. And it is utterly ruthless, and it is a crime. You know, there are rules of engagement for people who are involved in armed struggles. Terrorists follow their own illegal means, and that's why there was an international agreement. People think that the United States, after the 9/11, somehow that was the only case of terrorism. Actually, the rest of the world said to the United States, hey, we're with you. We're against terrorism, because all of us have had that happen. And let us make a common effort. And it wasn't 3 months or 4 months before the Americans departed from the United Front against terrorism and tried to use terrorism against others. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Phil.
Yeah, so I want to say something else that you said. During the questioning period, somebody asked her about the educational facilities they have in Xinjiang for people who have been affected by the terrorist propaganda. And they said, isn't this after all like the residential schools in Canada? And he says, after all, you have children in these facilities. Isn't that the same thing? And you have the children in dormitories while they go to school. And she took the question very politely and just said, well, no. In your residential schools, they just took the children and kept them. We have dormitories because the parents have to go to work, and it's easier for the children to stay overnight at the school, but they all go home on the weekend to their parents. And she didn't add, of course, that the children in the residential school never got to go home, right? But you know, left that for people to conclude. And I thought it was a very measured response to a question that in some way was a little bit provocative, right?
So do this, Phil.
Yeah.
Apropos, and I really appreciate that they held that Zoom conference with all the quite impressive people. The world, we're not reminding Canadians enough that the Organization of Islamic Countries, that are 57 Muslim countries, have regular meetings to discuss problems of Islam and protection of the rights of members of the faith, and that they're wherever they are in the world. One third of Muslims live outside Muslim countries, and so they go to pains to keep track of their conditions. So the Organization of Islamic Countries said the following in a resolution. And they had a number of resolutions, and they say, we welcome the outcomes of the visit conducted by the General Secretariat's delegation upon the invitation from the People's Republic of China, commends the effort of the People's Republic of China in providing care to its Muslim citizens, and looks forward to further cooperation between the Organization of Islamic Countries and the People's Republic of China. And so we have a non-Muslim country, as I notice, the United States, claiming it cares, and it's gonna pound the table and make threats about China and its treatment of the Uyghur, people in the Uyghur autonomous area of China province. And here's the Organization of Islamic Countries, and it's like the United States doesn't even acknowledge their existence. And they say they were invited, and that they are commend China on its handling of the rights of Muslims in China. The rest is just, you know, pyrotechnics and a Hollywood malarkey.
Yeah, Phil, if I can comment, there is, you know, China is doing a very, very good job of using modern communications technology to get its message out. And there is now, if you go on the internet, you can find any number of very well-made videos, short films and things like that, shot in the streets of the two major cities of Xinjiang, Urumqi and Kashgar. And honestly, I mean, it's like, and they show you, and the people who make these videos, they show you, one, they show you that everything is in two languages in Kashgar. Everything is in the Uyghur language and in Chinese, right? They show you that the Uyghur language appears on the money. Chinese currency, right. You know, so I have to say that Max Blumenthal spent a fair amount of time talking about the campaign against China and the people who are the so-called experts. And he talked about this individual, Adrian Zenz, who, as far as we know, has never been in China, doesn't read the language or anything like that, but somehow claims to be a researcher who has uncovered disconnected facts apropos of nothing and strung them together and say that they are proof of genocide. And he went into some of those facts. And he says, this is mind-boggling stuff. He says, these things don't prove anything. And in some cases, one of the things that he really wanted to talk about was the allegation that the birth rate of Uyghurs is being suppressed as a form of genocide. And the consul made the point, the birth rates are declining in Xinjiang because the place is industrializing and people are going to work. And when women move to the cities and go to work, the birth rates go down, right? That happens. And everybody knows that happens all over the world, right?
Well, that's just you have development.
Right. You have development and women have more opportunities to
rights of individuals.
Right. That's right. And she pointed out that even when China had the one child policy, which said couples were only allowed to have one child, that policy only applied to the Han Chinese. I could see some Han Chinese being kind of resentful of that, although I've never met one who is. But she says the minorities, in particular the Uyghurs, were never at any time subjected to that policy and were free to have the largest families they wanted and did. Right. So this notion that there's some sort of a genocide happening is they just marshaled facts and put them out on the table about what life was like there, you know.
And remember, all that underlining all this is the U.S. desire to try to take advantage of this propaganda campaign to actually carry out aggressive policies such as, well, in the decision to take a terrorist group, the one you described what they did, that group has been taken off the terrorist list by the United States. So they are sanctioning it's that isn't the right word. It's they're promoting violence.
Yes. And by the way, the United Nations has not removed these.
No,
it's Turkmenistan, the Islamic Front, from the terrorist list. In fact, the United States is now violating an international agreement where countries are going to respect that list.
Permitting a group of criminals to cross borders to engage in violence. That's what underlines all this phony concern, which is based on their own propaganda. You've been listening to the Phil Conlon, Classical Underground, Wednesdays 6 to 8. Phil, this is apropos of what you're saying. We have a headline. We want to make sure that the listeners of the Taylor Report hear, because this has not been, to my knowledge, reported here. The Australian Parliament refuses to label China's Xinjiang actions as genocide. They voted it down in the Australian Parliament. Remember when Canada voted 266 to nothing?
Yeah.
And so, you know, I mean, if the Canadian Parliament says it's so, it must be so. And so here we have dueling parliaments and also people wanting to sustain this libel, this smear of China based on saying, oh, the parliament voted. That isn't how you ascertain facts. And to, again, to point out, even if the Australian parliament had voted in agreement with the Canadian parliament, you would still have the basic forensic issue that nobody's shown anything. These are allegations, but it shows how the Canadian parliament knocked itself out to go that extra mile to destroy possibility of relations, friendly relations, repairing of relations with China. You can, it's like as I was speaking at the top of the show about Biden's way of talking about Putin. That is language that is not repairable. And if you make a horrific accusation, as Putin said, listen, that sticks to you. If someone calls you a terrible thing, that can't be, you can't repair that. The only way they can be repaired, as we always say to the other guy, is you better take that back. You better take that back. And you and I talked about it on a show last week, General Dallaire, he wanted to go further. He wanted two things. He wants to go into China. He's got to go in there based on the parliament's resolution. Got to go in there now, in there being sovereign, yeah. China.
The sovereign country of China. General Dallaire wants to lead a little battalion into China.
Short of that, we have to destroy the Olympic Games, which are scheduled for China. And he had the vulgarity of comparing it to Germany, which is just unspeakable. We already mentioned all these things. But I think the general is trying to have his clock cleaned. He's decided he needed to have his clock absolutely cleaned up for him. And if he were to get his wish, we'd have to say to him, make sure you leave a card behind, because for one thing, you have to go by himself. The rest of the world does not want to go. And anyway, but that's the embarrassing situation. Anyway, we underline the fact the Australian Parliament disagrees with the Canadian Parliament. So Five Eyes have kind of crossed themselves. This is an unstable group. And here they are. They're white, Anglo-American, Protestant, and still they get into trouble. There's something about, maybe they are exceptional. And the rest of the world should just stand back and let them do to one another what they would apparently like to do. I think we've covered an awful lot of it. We got to mention Myanmar. There was an outburst that, again, I don't know that the listeners, the Taylor Report, are aware, but the foreign minister of the Philippines, you can watch him on YouTube. He's become a YouTube celebrity because he said, Myanmar, the crisis there is because of the Americans. He said they had a political solution and they had a leader, Suu Kyi. And he says the Americans ran her down. The Americans undermined her completely. So he said the army is the only thing that holds the country together ultimately. And so they took over. But he said it's because of the Americans. He said the Philippines wants to get together with India and China and other countries in the region, and we can solve the problem and go back to where we were with Suu Kyi as the president or the leader. But he said, the only way, and he says, I'm gonna say this, I don't wanna see a white face at the meeting. He said, when they come, there's nothing but trouble. He said, they destroyed Libya, they destroyed Syria because they wanted the oil. They don't care about anybody's rights. This is the foreign minister of the Philippines. Phil, you know a little bit about the Philippines.
Yes. His name is Teddy Loxin. He's a very colorfully well-expressed guy. He has been in combat with those Filipinos who really love the connection with the United States. And this is something that's not being reported here, is that Filipinos, including their president and their foreign minister, are questioning what is the value to the Philippines of this military alliance with the United States. And the president has told the Americans, you know, you have all kinds of bases and things here. You have to start paying us. Yeah, there's no reason you should be able to have this for free. But I think behind it is that they understand that they're being set up to be a staging ground if America ever decides it's going to have a hot fight with China. And well, Philippines, why should they be a staging ground for that? No.
The Philippines is a crucial area, and it's you can see its importance because it's not talked about here. Because there's always been an expectation that the Americans, as Bill Clinton liked to say, would bring the hammer down on the Philippines, as they have done in the past. After all, they violently captured the Philippines and tried to turn it into an American state at one point. They had the idea of making it like Guam many, many years ago. But the Philippines population is obviously wise to this in the way that, the victims of assault remember the assault better than the one who does the assaulting.
I want to say that during COVID, the Philippines was not on anybody's list in the West of countries that it was vital to get vaccine to. So they are now receiving vaccine in the Philippines, and only now for the first time in the past couple of weeks, it's all coming from China. And you can be sure that the Filipino people are noticing that. Well, the Americans didn't send them any vaccine, right? The British didn't send them any vaccine, but the Chinese are sending it as a gift. It's a gift for the people of China.
People should go and see, watch the remarks of the Philippine foreign minister. As I say, he's an internet celebrity. Millions of people are looking at it and laughing. Apropos of the vaccine, Edward Keenan, in the Toronto Star has a story, deal with US could bring 1.5 million doses to Canada. And I said, well, that's not much of a headline. When I, in reading the story about how Canada has had problems getting the vaccines, in the middle of the story, he says the following, the Canadian embassy in Washington referred to questions about the pending arrangement to U.S. questions, to U.S. authorities, an official in the Canadian Prime Minister's office, speaking on background only basis, confirmed that Canada expects to receive AstraZeneca doses from the U.S., but said details are being worked out, still being worked out. The Canadian government understands it is being framed as a loan because the Biden administration is reluctant to announce it is giving away doses before all Americans, you understand that story. And then it says, and this is the part that got me, the official stressed it is unclear how a loan would work and the talks are, quotes, ongoing. It's unclear whether Canada would later send back 1.5 million doses to the US or whether the 1.5 million doses bound for Canada have come out of the contracted vaccine Canada has purchased from AstraZeneca, US facility, in which case it simply amounts to the US agreeing to release vaccine already bought and paid for by Canada.
And by the way, Phil, that 1.5 is...
Why wasn't that the headline? By the way, Keenan, I think they have a program at CIUT.
Right. And that 1.5 million is out of a supply of 20 million, which we can't emphasize this enough, cannot be used in the United States because unlike in Canada, the AstraZeneca has not been approved by the U.S. authorities. So it's sitting in a warehouse heading toward its best before date, not being used. And the Americans are acting like we're really doing you a big favor here. They're sending 2.5 million to Mexico. Mexico probably could use the whole 20 million as well, right? And I don't know if they've paid for it or not, but Canada's paid for it and they can't get it. And now they're getting it and the Americans are saying, oh, we're going to do you a favor and lend it to you.
Yeah. That phrase, this is again, Edward Keenan, the Toronto Star, and he says about they're going to get this from the U.S. facility. And he says, in which case, it simply amounts to the U.S. agreeing to release vaccine already bought and paid for by Canada. Well, thanks a lot. And which, of course, moved our premier to say, God bless America. That's what he said. Did you see Doug?
Doug Ford said, God bless America. He did.
They kicked it in my face. They drugged me.
I mean, I'm expecting Doug to wear a little American flag on his suit any day now. It just
and they pick him up and dust him off. He says, what do you want to say? He says, God bless America. God bless America, by God. Oh, man. Listen, what is the word for this place? We have vacillation. We are a vacillation. Sure. We're not vacillating. We are vassal. And it's pathetic, but at any rate, I hope people are paying attention and realize, look, we're going to have to say, Canada, you want to talk about dangerous behavior. Please tell Biden to learn to talk like the leader of a country that is civilized. Stop talking like a barbarian and say also to Mr. Blinken, don't talk about you speak from a position of strength. When you meet another country, you meet them as an equal. And you know, when Biden was elected, he said, oh, we're gonna try diplomacy. Well, we're not seeing any diplomacy. What we're seeing is, once again, the John Wayne, Ronald Reagan, Bush Senior, Obama, it's Trump, and the whole thing is playing not to the world, but to an American crowd. And for their own safety, they need to be told, straight is the gate. If you want to join the righteous, you're going to have to learn how to behave. And it's really, Canada's supposed to be a friend of the United States. If you're a friend, you know, whisper in her ear, could you tone it down? You know, you're scaring the Canadians. Anyway, this is has been the Taylor Report. We are on Facebook and SoundCloud. And for Phil Conlon, I'm Phil Taylor, and we'll see you next week.